Hey everyone, Sam here. I just wanted to say that we lost the audio from this podcast, but we're still going to publish it with the backup audio from the cameras because we thought it was a really good conversation. So apologies about the audio quality, but if you can get used to it, I think there's some good content in here. So I hope you enjoy. And next week we'll be back to our normal level of quality. So without further ado, let's get right into it.
Yo, yo, yo. We're back.
We're back. Been a while.
Yeah, about a month.
Man, it's still reverby in here. Gotta fix that.
Where are the panels?
You should have been on that, man.
Yeah.
It's been a month since we podcasted.
I feels like it. It might actually happen.
That's crazy. Well, I went to Miami for React Miami, which was fun. First conference since COVID.
Nice.
Yeah. It was good to be back, man. For sure. Yeah. Met a bunch of people from Twitter, you know, just the whole conference thing. Definitely, like, energizes me. Definitely missed it. Hopefully there's a lot more conferences in our future.
Yeah, I mean, there's another React conference going on this week.
So yeah.
Couldn't
swing that one, but
we're going to make up for years of lost conference.
I had a cool conversation with one of the guys who spoke. His name was Tejas, right? Right, the guy that I'm
with?
Tejas. And he works at this company called Exada. It's a database company, but, you know, it's a React conference, a bunch of front-end developers sitting around talking about front-end stuff, but he gave a talk about, like, databases, which is always, you know, interesting. I'm like a front-end developer, where do I care about databases, you know? But the whole pitch of their company, I need to read more about it, but there were some interesting tidbits. Like, the whole pitch of their company is, like, think data, not databases, which is kind of nice. It's like, can you abstract away a database from a front-end developer? You know, that's like, if you send me a cold, that's like one of those tests. You send me a cold email that said something like that, but yes, I'm interested. I never want to type in another like Postgres URL string anywhere in config ever again. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But the really neat, the little tidbit that I thought was neat was he was talking about ACID, you know, and consistency versus like stale data. And he was like, their whole thing is like giving app developers, front-end developer, whatever, that doesn't really matter. It's more like app developers, people who are just building features, right? And you give them a way in like one line to say whether you want your data to be fast and stale or slow or inconsistent, because that's like a fundamental constraint that all databases have. And, you know, we've talked about like, you know, Planet Scale is doing some interesting stuff. And then I think the first one was the guys from Twitter who were making, what's the one with the A? The database that's like globally distributed. Isn't it
AWS?
No.
Aura? That's AWS.
Fauna. F, not A.
Close.
A, B, C, D, E, F. It's only six letters off. It's like something my mom would say. Yes. It's only six letters off. Fauna was trying to do that, right? That's what that's partly what they're doing. It's like trying to go around that constraint. Because they were at Twitter and they were trying to scale up these, like, you know, this is always those things when people start talking about these databases. It's like, yeah, scaling database clusters always mess up teams. Like, I've never been on any of the teams I've worked with who are like starting up and they have SaaS small projects or whatever. Don't really run into that. But then I guess we did have that at some companies we worked at before.
Yeah.
So it is a real, it is a real problem. It's just not something that I've ever been like spearheading. I see much more problems with like the base complexity. Anyways, that's besides the point. Point is, these companies are all trying to solve it. So when you hit ish levels of scale, you don't have to really think about this stuff. But you still have like the speed of light as a constraint. And so it kind of comes up where even if you had like the best technology ever, if you're building Twitter and someone likes to tweet in Japan, it's like, where is the origins database server that gets the new favorite, the new like? And if you put that in a database that's close to Japan, someone can write really quickly. But then if you're reading a tweet from California, then it's going to take a long time to read it. So there's a time between someone liking it in Japan and reading it in California.
There's things that are consistent. Likes can be inconsistent because no one is.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that complain that their likes are.
Yeah, right.
But it shouldn't fundamentally break anything about Twitter, or maybe like a stock price.
Exactly.
Inconsistency there could actually like cost the company real money.
Exactly. So that's kind of what's cool that their company is framing, I think, data, not database. I guess it's like you are thinking about which slices of your data need to be faster and can tolerate some level of being stale versus you just made a deposit to your bank account and I would rather have it take an extra 3 or 5 seconds with a load spinner to see what the current balance is. I never want to see a stale version of that. And basically there's like a one line way you can do that.
I was thinking you like compare that like a table level.
I don't know the details, but he was basically saying like, this is something that's a concern of an application developer. It should be accessible to them. Whereas normally it's like a artifact of how your DevOps and database team is setting things up.
Yeah.
But that kind of ties your hands as a front-end developer because you're like, I'm trying to build a UX that conforms to some whatever requirements or what my product manager is telling me. And if I like a tweak, you know, and it's stale or it takes a long time, I might not be able to build the UX that I need.
It's really cool that it actually forces you to think about what you're building, right? So like if you say like this thing should be fast and inconsistent, and that's like, okay. First of all, you can talk about that with anyone.
Right.
Like, where if you go up to a non-technical person and start talking about Cassandra or Bigtable,
right,
and they're just going to like,
right,
you know,
right,
fall asleep.
Right.
So yeah. And then also
to mention Cassandra too.
A lot of times, like, it's like when you have a database, what should I pick on today? So you're using
Mongo.
I pick on Mongo too much. So you're using like Redis or whatever, and you're using it for whatever reason. It has like really, you chose it because it has these really good data structure transforms. You get guarantees about how you like push and pop from stacks, whatever. You chose that. That kind of gets lost in translation. So someone else starts building a feature and they're like, oh, I have Redis. I'll just start using Redis. And like all of a sudden you become centered around using Redis or something. You know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Where it's much better to be centered around fast,
yes,
and consistent.
Yes.
It's like
it's not about Redis, but Postgres.
Right.
About
exactly
the requirements of the data.
And so like you end up, you just have these servers available. You're familiar with them. You end up writing data. It's like a bad game of telephone.
Right.
Am I using it? Oh, it's available. I used
right.
it in the last feature I built.
Right, right, right.
Or this actually forces you to think about it.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool.
It's neat. The other cool thing about it is Postgres, which when I was learning, you know, the first time I was introduced to this idea of like globally replicated databases was with the DynamoDB talk from Amazon. And that guy who headed the project was talking about how it's important to use a document store that's not like Postgres because you need to be able to partition your database in order to replicate it so that if we're working in a Google Doc, we can put that near us and it doesn't have to be like worrying about, the system doesn't have to worry about replicating that to Japan because we're the ones who access it, we're the ones who use it.
We're not in Japan.
Exactly. And so a Google Doc has like text, it has comments, it has all these things. If these were all in different Postgres tables, you would need all the tables near us. But if it's in a tree structure, you can literally take that part and have all the data and move it in different places around the world. So he was saying like there's an important educational aspect to educating developers on how to restructure their data. Like it's almost like a leaky abstraction, but it's important. He's explaining how Amazon worked basically and how they made Amazon.com fast. And this was like an important thing where he was like, basically with how networks and compute and like processing power was advancing, like the Higgs law stuff and all that. He was like, this is where things are going because X is getting cheaper and Y is more expensive. So we have to do this. I can't remember exactly the argument, but like doing a join across a globally distributed database is like you're just kind of starting out dead in the water. And
yeah,
so,
you have to, the problem there is you have to replicate the whole database.
Yes, because you have to do arbitrary joins. So whereas, you know, we built 99% of our apps with relational model where you have the ability to do arbitrary joins, and so we wouldn't want to give that up necessarily. And so this is pretty cool that it uses Postgres. It's just a cool thing because then, you know, it's one less thing to think about. So
for sure. And also too, like this goes back to kind of what you said with like the biggest problem you see is not like data. It's app complexity.
Yeah.
I kind of feel the same about like databases.
Yeah.
It's like bad data modeling. It's not
right.
Your document store.
Right.
Scales around it.
Right. 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 Right.
Totally. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. You know, it reminds me of like a cash counter in Rails. You know, that's like an example of, it's like a performance thing because you can't do, you know, you want to be able to read that next to the post or whatever for the comments count.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great API. And once you learn how to use cache counters and Rails, you can treat it as if you're querying like the comments table and selecting count of star, mm-hmm. where post ID is this. And that's a great API, but it's also like, you do have to be aware of it as a developer. So it's cool to think about this as almost like a generalized version of that, which is like, I should be able to like select star from tweet lights where the tweet ID is this, but like, maybe I can just keep doing that if I tolerate some staleness and then like, I don't worry about it. And like a technology takes care of like caching or just like rolling things up every second or whatever it is.
The inconsistency of the fast, but inconsistency of a cache counter in Rails leaks.
Yes.
Because you now are like very aware of your select statement in your database column. So it'd be really cool
if it didn't.
You just selected count.
Right.
Under the hood, run a cache counter.
Right. So yeah, anyway, that was fun. It was fun just having those kind of random conversations. Those are my favorite parts of the conference. I spent most of the time in the hallway track, you know. Met a bunch of people from the internet, which was fun. So did some karaoke, drank some margaritas. It was fun. Miami was a good time. It was a nice time in New York to be in Miami. It's like March, April in New York City is like the worst time to be here.
Yeah, it really is.
November, December is cold, but it's like romantic in New York City because it's like Saks Fifth Avenue and Christmas and Thanksgiving. January, February, March, April, pretty rough. Spring comes really nice. Summer is amazing. Fall is like the best.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fall is. Yeah.
So I like this South hot conference season in Q1, Q2. I'm on board with this.
What is it called? Snowbirds?
Yeah, snowbirds. That's my goal. That's the point of life I'm at. I want to be a snowbird. Cool. Well, last time we were chatting, I think I had just worked on a video for like the React vocab, React jargon around React 18 and concurrent mode and stuff, and we were talking about the how use effect works in strict mode in React 18. So yeah, I think since our last podcast, React 18 has come out, or maybe it had just come out in our last podcast, but we hadn't really read the stuff. So we want to talk about that because it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So there was a big change to strict mode in React 18 in that it double fires your effects. And there was a lot of like people tweeting that this was confusing, it was breaking their app. And we just wanted to chat about that. And it was like fun to read about it. So where should we start? I guess basically they have a nice explanation in the React 18 blog post. And they say, you know, in React 17, the change from React 17 to 18 is that in 18, if you are rendering your app or component inside of React.strict mode, it'll double fire your mount effect. So
it'll mount,
it'll
unmount, and then mount again.
Right. So it mounts your component when you render component. It creates your effects and your layout effects. Then it immediately simulates an unmount. That's what they say. It simulates an unmount. And so it destroys your layout effects and your effects, meaning it runs the cleanup function.
Exactly.
And then it simulates a remount using the previous state. So it actually could be like a different world in a sense, because like the simulated remount is with whatever the version of the state is at that time. And I think it could have actually changed between those steps. But basically, it's like, if you had like set a ref or something, it will still be set or set a state.
Set timeout that's just like running super quickly and it's updating some state.
Yeah.
That state would change.
Or you had initialized state, right? Let's say you lazy initialized state. You know how you can like do that in use state?
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't run again.
Correct.
So it's not remounting your component.
Yeah,
that it's simulating a remount.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. That's the difference. And so they run the effect, but the effect is referencing the version of the component that was there when it simulated an unmount.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like breaking a ton of people's code, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, all the use effect with an empty dependency array, treating that as unmount, therefore this thing will only ever run once.
Right.
I want to say broken. It's not broken because React, I don't think it really guaranteed that would work, but it's your app is broken because you were probably thinking that it would only run that effect would only run once.
Right.
For most of our effects, if they're like no ops or idempotent, fine.
Yeah.
But if your effect is doing something like send a on mount, it's like paying an analytics service, mm-hmm. that's going to get two pings now.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot here, right? It's like, first of all,
we should talk about why they're doing this.
Yes. So, yes. Okay. So the reason they're doing this kind of goes back to my video. I'm definitely linked to it because that was my best attempt to explain and break down why all this is happening, basically. And it's all around concurrent mode, which is that,
I think this one has to do with like off the double effect is off screen.
Yeah. I think if I were to explain it in a general way, it's that concurrent mode features like off screen or, like transitions, they need to be able to run your app separately. It's a separate version of your app. And no?
No. Well, okay. So strict mode is basically going to guard you against concurrent mode. And it's all this stuff you're talking about, like running concurrent versions of your app,
yeah.
making sure you're not referencing refs and state during render because those things could change. During
right.
our render, but this double effect firing effects won't run in the concurrent versions of the app. Effects run when component gets mounted on screen. The reason for these double effects firing is there's going to be a new
effects don't run in the concurrent version of the app. It's like a server rendered version almost.
Effects run after commit, so that the component is on screen. Yes, the component is on the screen. Because it's a side effect. Like it's a side effect of rendering.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm gonna update the title, I need to do it in a side effect because I might be
It makes sense.
I might be running a component off screen.
Okay, now I'm coming back. Sorry. There's a lot of arteriism out here in the last 2 weeks.
But you're right about like this is the greater goal of strict mode is to prepare you for all of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And most of it has to do with concurrent mode. But this double effect firing is going to be about this off-screen API. And so to describe this, imagine you have like tabs. You have a UI and you're building tabs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, click tab one, and that renders like tab one component. Click tab two, that renders like profile component. As you click between these tabs, those components are going to become rendered and unrendered. So say you like, go to the profile, you make some changes, and then you go to the next tab and you make some changes, and then you want to go back to the profile. Like any state that was stored with that profile component is gone because you've unrendered the component.
Right.
And then maybe you want to like do all these tabs and then click a save button at the end.
Mm.
So like, how do you solve this problem in React today?
Today you would use
like context or
store, an external store.
Yeah. Just like all the versions of context.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crappy because React actually wants to own your state.
Sure. Less is easier when you keep state inside of React.
And
there's so many reasons.
And also too, with concurrent mode, it actually wants to own your state because it can actually modify the state in the concurrent version of the app.
Yeah.
And then come
prepare
back.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it wants to own your state. It just
pre-render it. Yeah. Sure.
You start doing it in global stores.
Sure.
You're kind of opting out of concurrent, some features of concurrent mode. So, there's going to be an off-screen API that basically, when you're going between these tabs,
mm-hmm.
by the way, this is like, none of this is
today.
It's just like theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Theoretical is not the right word, but planned. If I'm on profile and I go to like settings and it's just a tab on one page and I go back to profile, I want to be able to reuse the state from profile that I originally had.
Yeah.
And so off screen is what lets you do that.
Okay, off screen. So
off screen,
you can keep it rendered basically.
Yeah.
Even though it's like not really, so it's never really unmounted, but it's going to be unrendered in a sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Uncommitted from the browser.
Exactly. So it's not rendered, but you want it to remember all of its state and you don't want to have to immediately reach for like these contacts.
That would be awesome.
I guess
that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
It'd be like if you were doing the feature in GitHub where you save a comment, you know, to local state as you update your setting comment text, and then you want to go away, but come back and restore it. I mean, if you could render that as
that's interesting.
The key for like the post ID or something.
So is that how? Like, I was thinking, like, how would you remember which issue is tied to it? Yeah, maybe key.
Be pretty amazing.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
okay.
Your component is unrendered,
right.
you're remembering the state. So if that component was doing things like opening up WebSocket connections, you want to close those because it's not rendered.
Yeah.
So your effect is going to run its cleanup function. And then when you go back to the tab, you're going to re-render that component with its old state. So the effect is going to run its map function again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this double effect rendering is trying to simulate. Mm-hmm. It's trying to simulate running the effect, running the cleanup, and then running the effect again with the modified state.
Oh, okay. All right. New stream of, I'm just going to read from the docs. New stream of behaviors and the feature we'd like to add, a feature that allows React to add and remove sections of the UI while preserving state. Oh, okay. I didn't realize what this was about. I knew this was one subset. I thought it was a general thing to make sure that your components are more resilient. But now I understand why it simulates and then it uses the previous state exactly for this reason. So the memory is the new thing that actually breaks like the current mental model of React. If you click away from a tab, you would expect the state to be reset. In fact, a lot of behavior it would be broken if that change were made. It's not that that's a feature of announcing a component, right. It's that the state is reset, and probably every React app relies on that either implicitly or explicitly.
Yes. But I will say this isn't just going to magically happen for all your
components. Right. No,
you have to wrap it in off screen.
For example, when either tab is away from the screen and back, React should be able to immediately show the previous screen. To do this, React would unmount. Right. So, yeah, exactly. Components requires components to be resilient to effects. I'll just finish reading it. Immediately show the previous screen. To do this, React would unmount and remount trees using the same component state as before. This feature will give React apps better performance out of the box, but requires components to be resilient to effects being mounted and destroyed multiple times. Most effects will work without any changes, but some effects assume they are only mounted or destroyed once. To help surface these issues, React 18 introduces a new development-only check to strict mode. This new check will automatically unmount and remount every component whenever a component mounts for the first time, restoring the previous state on the second mount. Yeah, so, sorry, when we just had a near explosion in one of our fluorescent light bulbs, if this was broken up a little bit, that's why. Picking back up where we left off, I had thought
just about remounting the podcast.
We're remounting the podcast.
Simulating
the previous state. Yeah. That's pretty good. That deserved more blast from me, but that's all you're going to get today. I thought it was about generally making your components robust to just being like, but it actually makes sense. That's something I think I didn't fully click, is that your effects don't run until a tree is committed. But that makes a lot of sense. So in my video, I go through this whole explanation of how render is supposed to be pure, render is supposed to be idempotent, and the easiest way to think about use effect is that it lets you remove impurities from the render calculation. So any impurity that you have that would be unsafe to run a million times, you put it in a use effect. And so, of course, those aren't running during this end universe creation of your, you know, creating n different versions of your apps, because that's the whole point. They're supposed to mark the things that are not safe to be run over and over again. The mount and unmount and remount is for this feature. Okay, now it all makes sense.
But they do tie together.
Yes.
They do tie together,
yes.
Because you want all this, you want all your data in state,
yeah,
so that it can be run with different in and universes.
Yeah.
But there are certain UIs where you can't use React State because you need to persist that.
So does it? So does it mean if we get an off screen? I didn't realize this. I explained the off screen thing about like preparing a screen literally off screen and then like swiping it on so it's like ready to go. You can animate it in something like that, which you might be able to do. Because it's going to be like ready to go, you would have to like wait to render it or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is a lot clearer to me. It's a tabs component, and
I thought your video. I didn't
know that makes sense, but I didn't realize it applied so much. If you get this off screen, would you need an external store anymore? I mean, a store could solve a single source of truth for multiple components. But if you're just using a store or a context in order to persist state for a single component, you don't need to do that anymore.
Right. And the, like,
which is a super badass
light bulb moment for me here. And I'm kind of like guessing. But
yeah.
Concurrent mode, you want to be able to transition to new states of your app, which means you need to render your profile component in different states,
yeah,
in and universes,
yeah.
And if you're forced because you're building a tab UI to use an external store.
Right.
You can no longer do that.
Right. Because React doesn't know. Yeah. How can React wants, can't fork your store. I mean, unless there's a whatever.
Well, this is like, there's like these, like,
it's hard.
These code sandboxes that Dan put together with like cache APIs.
Right.
To do this. But that'd
be way easier to just use React State.
It's what you said. Those cache APIs are about synchronizing state across multiple
components.
Yeah. That's not the problem we're dealing with.
Right.
We want a single component to own all of its state. We're just going to tab away from that component.
Right.
We don't want to be forced to go
to the store. You want to remember its last state.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's memory.
Because it's not about,
beyond its life cycle.
It's not about synchronizing the profile component with other components. Yeah. It's just the profile component needs to own its state while it's rendered in Unreal.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
So because of all this,
so that's the motivation.
Yeah.
Right.
Your effects will do, they will be the mount, the unmount, and then the mount again. And this bit me. This is what I wanted to like about this on the podcast.
Okay.
It bit me, and when I realized it bit me, it actually made my code better. So I can go into this. So
do you know when that happens?
Yeah. So I'm building like this like cross page animation thing with Next. So I cross like literally cross page animations. It's mind blowing.
Okay.
How cool it is with Framer Motion.
Nice.
Part of what you need to know is when you go back and forth between these pages, you need to know like where you were on the last page, where the item was, just so you can like smoothly, if you're going to go back, you need to like scroll to a certain position. You need to know like the X, Y, where you're coming from. There's like just a whole bunch of things that you run into. So I set up this component that basically logs the router's history, but I don't care about like the current history of the router. I just care about like the last page. So I just tap into like all the Next routing states, and I just keep track of them. It's like super, super simple. But it's like a stack, and you can just kind of go through the stack and see all the pages you are on. So when I'm rendering my component, I need like to set up the stack. So it's like an array with just one object. And so I just had a use effect, set up this data structure, set up this data structure, and I did it on now. So just an empty dependency array, and I wasn't using like any dependencies. Like it could be an empty dependency. It's just an on now. So
this is the thing I wanted to make just as part of the story, is that people sometimes like abuse the empty dependency array, get something to run once. Just as an aside, whenever we code in React, we always use the ESLint rule. And if there's a missing dependency that it tells us should be added, we add it and figure out how to make the effect resilient to
it.
So you're already kind of approaching it kind of like that, but there was still this issue. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So,
it was empty, and it wasn't empty because you were violating the ESLint rule. It was
correct.
Empty because there was no dependency.
There's no dependency. Setting up some state and
kind of ref or something like that.
Yeah, there. I think I maybe ended up like adding a few dependencies and had them in
there.
But yeah, I'm just trying to
the point,
right? Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, it's like the stack data structure. When it initializes and these conditions are met, I have an effect that just kind of seeds it with its initial value. And I just for whatever, you could like do this as a state initializer, but I had to make sure like the router was ready. I actually needed an effect for this. I don't want to complicate
this. Yeah.
So anyway, I run this and my stack has two items in it. And I'm like, why does my stack have two items in it? And it's because that effect was running twice. I was just like looking at the empty dependency arrays, like this is an on mount thing, but it was actually running twice during that. So made me realize
that was crazy.
It made me realize, I was like, it's actually kind of crappy to just like use an empty dependency array to signal, or whatever the dependencies were in there, is just like a proxy for this is initialization code. Because my effect was double running, I realized like there's actually more logic here that I want to capture in code, where it's like, if I have an empty stack and these conditions are met, seed the stack, like push this item onto.
It actually doesn't have to do with like mounting and unmounting.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
It has to do with if my stack is empty and your conditions are met.
So I actually think about initialization logic as being tied to mounting, but it's not.
Bingo.
That's crazy.
So I added an if statement that said, okay, if my stack is empty and, you know, the rest of the crap, push on this initial item. And I walked away from this. I was like, wow, that actually improved my code, because it's exactly what you just said. I was just using initialization as a proxy. But that's not the real logic.
Right.
The real logic was if all these conditions are met.
It's like you had a class and you used a constructor to create some stuff, but then you refactor to say get users, and like your get users getter function first checks, like, if I don't have an underscore users, fetch it, otherwise return it. You're thinking about it differently. It's not about constructing the object. It's about like when I need the users, I check if I have them, and if not, do the expect. It's like memoizing almost. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that idea. But, that's why I like when hooks were first announced, 4 years ago, right? Old.
Yeah, sure.
Old. They talked about writing an effect with no dependency array first. And conceptually, your effect should be able to run on every render.
Yeah.
They talked about that. And then you only didn't do that like for performance reasons, but from a mental model, the mental model of an effect is that it should run every time the component is rendered.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we would have been better off if we never had dependency arrays. Cause then you would be guarding your thing and thinking about how it runs when it changes.
Because
it's not about mounting or not.
Right.
You would have already had that guard because this thing would have been firing all the time.
Right.
And you would have been able to encode the logic, which is what the effect actually is, which is if I don't have an array for my stack, create it.
Right. You can think about this with like the WebSocket connections or analytics.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not,
exactly. You're
it's
gonna
not
be,
do this on mount.
It's and maybe
if
it's,
I'm not connected to the WebSocket.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course, maybe it's a practical thing where like you just don't want to run the, you want to run this code every time the page ID changes, and that way you don't have to think about it. But what if you had to run the effects every time the component rendered and you had no control over that? You might have to encode more logic into your effect. Let's say, how often do you want to track this page? If it's first rendered, like the first time the user visits it, have we tracked it yet in this stack of the history? For this entry in the history. So that's what you do. Have we done it for that? But if you go to this page, then back, and then back to this page, you want to retrack it again. Or maybe you want to track it if it's been a certain amount of seconds. So you're coding more of the domain logic into the effect, as opposed to relying on like rendering the
dependency arrays
and dependency arrays to guide your logic. So it's kind of interesting.
I'm not in line. I agree with this. I just take the other side. There's a few cases that just when you put that responsibility on
the
developer. It's like, so imagine your ID changing.
Yeah.
You're now having to use previous ID.
So
there's some things where it's like, oh, when my ID changes,
you would need a map that says I've already logged for this ID,
or just like last ID was 1, the new ID is 2, therefore I need to refetch the data.
Right.
And so then also do like the React removing time.
Yeah.
From your mental model
makes
things so much easier. So that if you're forced to introduce that.
If you're comparing previous with next, or current, it's pretty tough.
But I think
but it's nice to think about this.
Yes.
It is the right, it does seem like it's the right mental model.
And absolutely don't use empty dependency array
when you have dependencies
to say on now.
Right.
Don't first of all, that won't even work in strict mode because that's gonna fire twice.
Yeah.
But just even more just to drive this point home is it's not on mount.
It's something,
there's another condition that usually relates to your component state.
Yeah. Do I have WebSocket open? Have I initialized this stack?
Yep.
What else do we do on map? Fetching data, if SWR is fetching data. And a lot of those things probably.
Yeah, fetch requests.
Fetch requests is already going out. So you'd want some memory there. I'm sure the data fetching libraries will work, or probably already do work with that kind of thing. When you fetch API users 1, 2, 3, and then another component were to fetch it, I think libraries like SWR and React Query already dedupe
it's
already going in flight, and if it's already populated in cache, we'll just return it, maybe refresh it. So that's kind of cool. That's the idea. It's thinking about, that's an example of a hook that's resilient to and re-renders or an immediate unmount and remount. So
Very cool.
Pretty neat, man. That's cool stuff.
Yeah.
That was good. That helped me. I liked it. That was a good conversation because that helped me. That drove home the point about that.
Yes. Off-screen stuff and then more state, more concurrent mode, more transitions.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
It is awesome.
Future React is bright.
It is bright. It's really cool. I'm glad we'll be able to keep more state in React. If this is a change that leads to using less external store, fewer external stores and fewer homegrown caches and more React state, that's a win in my book.
Yeah,
I go as far as I can with React state.
Yeah, and again, I keep repeating this, but with concurrent mode, I think React controls your state, so it can render your app with multiple with different.
It can change your state and exactly. See under your app, and it's a pure calculation. It can find it, and it can be exactly. Put away before you commit it, or it can be committed immediately.
Where if you're using like module scope,
yeah,
you can't do that.
You can't.
Yeah. So, and then there's like, there's everything in between those two. You know, if you think about like the middle, that's the things like, I don't know, like external stores,
context
and all that stuff. And I think React will have some answers for those items with concurrent mode, but you can see how the more state that React owns, there's some more things it can do with the end universes, the off-screen APIs.
Right. Plus the assumptions about render being pure and all that,
yeah.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
So cool, man.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Cool. Awesome. I think that's probably a good spot to wrap it up. Yeah.
Okay.
That was fun. I didn't realize we'd be able to talk about strict mode for that long, but it was interesting seeing people on Twitter talk about it. And, I think it was tough for a lot of people because they wanted to upgrade and it was kind of weird. I don't have experience yet, having a big app and trying to add it. I guess you could strict mode to like different parts and just try to start refactoring it.
Oh, that's a good point. I never
thought of that. Strict mode is a component.
Yeah, component tree.
So if all of your crap starts breaking, like that's a lot to do. Like if you were any of the apps, the big apps we worked on, if we were upgrading it and everything broke, like we wouldn't just stop the world and do that. So probably do one at a time. Also, if you're not using, if your app is not broken, strict mode breaking your app doesn't mean your app is broken at all. There's no observable bugs in your app. Also, just because you upgrade to React 18 doesn't mean you're starting to use concurrent features. So React 18 is not doing anything different to your app that's going to affect how it renders compared to React 17. It's only if you start using concurrent features. That was their whole thing. They changed it from like your app is now in concurrent mode to like you now use concurrent features. So if you started using suspense or transitions or off-screen, this theoretical off-screen thing that doesn't even exist yet, then you would want to run that subtree of your app against strict mode and make sure it works.
Yeah.
But if you upgrade to 18 because you want to stay on top of the upgrade path, but your strict mode doesn't work, you can still do that and you can start adding strict mode piece by piece to your app. So
what about
it's not going to change the behavior though. So people are thinking that their app is broken in React 18 because strict mode is showing bugs. But first of all, it doesn't happen in production. And second of all, you're not using any concurrent features. Strict mode, again, is designed to surface bugs related to concurrency, to concurrent mode features. And so if you can use React 18 without using any concurrent mode features, and so that's fine.
I like that. What about, like, I start using a bunch of libraries, and those libraries start opting into concurrent mode features?
I think you're going to have to be explicit about that, the way SWR says suspend is true, because it's a big change. How do you know, if I was making a library that... You're saying library author is going to want to be able to freely use React 18 features.
I'm like a Next.js user, and I can imagine a world where like the Next router just uses transitions by default.
And it's an implementation detail, and it means your app code now has to be resilient to concur. That is interesting. What does it mean to say my app is compatible with React 18? Because you can have an app that works on React 18. There's basically no breaking changes to React 18. But does it really work on React 18 if you have code that's not concurrent safe?
I think the answer to this is like if libraries start introducing concurrent features as implementation details, then no, it doesn't. But if concurrent mode is all opt-in.
Right. I think it'd be good to people who are upgrading, just the same way we think it's good to keep apps upgraded, to make your app code work with strict mode.
Yes.
And to learn how to update your effects to make them more resilient.
Yep.
For the simulated mount and simulated remount.
I think,
but I think it's going to take a long time for that stuff to get to the ecosystem anyway. Yep. So, and an off-screen component doesn't exist yet. So it's more like, if that's what this is for, I know your app could break in strict mode because of this thing, but it could still work with suspense and transitions fine. Who knows?
And also, like you said, it still works in production because
exactly.
I think strict mode is more.
No, it works in production with suspense and transitions because those don't have bugs related to this issue. So exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had a violation of strict mode, a bug due to strict mode, and you were using off screen, then you would have a problem in production because off screen would cause a problem.
Okay, I didn't really think of that. So strict mode is like it's helping you with
production bugs.
But it's helping you with suspense and transitions by running your render function twice. But those things exist today.
Yeah, and I don't know if they would actually have. I don't know if that is a bug related to. I don't know if there would ever be a bug. Maybe there would. So maybe,
dude, there's. I mean, you can go on Reddit. There's people that are doing document title during in render. Like,
yeah.
And not in effect.
Like, and if you did that, yeah, so that's, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So strict mode renders your component twice, right?
Yes, renders your component
yeah.
twice. That's why you get, if you do a console on your render, you get one
yeah.
that's like normal.
That's pretty gnarly, but it is pretty cool. That, I'm guessing, is, yes, that's the thing that's going to, but that all already was true in React.
Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, wait, hold on. The point I'm trying to make is strict mode is doing things that exist today.
Yeah.
Like, it is rendering your component twice
yeah.
to protect you
yeah.
for concurrent mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? But it's also doing things that don't exist today.
Yes.
Like running your effects twice.
Simulating right now, right?
Simulating is better. I say running.
Yeah,
but
yeah running.
It's,
yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't actually exist today. There's no way.
That could cause an actual bug in production because there's no concurrent mode feature that will reproduce that behavior.
Yeah. Correct. So it's just interesting.
Yes.
It's just interesting.
Preparing you for it.
It's one is like preparing you for things that do exist today.
Right.
The other is preparing you. It's almost like, interject some opinion, but yeah. Okay. Just,
yeah.
Last thing I'll say is that if you are interested in like, you think you have a bunch of effects in your app and you're like, holy crap, I'm just going to get run over by this strict mode. I think it'd be really good to like, if you have effects that you only want to run on mount, create a use mount hook and do that. And then
use ref or something.
Exactly. I use ref.
Can literally ref. Only run one time.
Yeah.
And it's easier than saying, like, maybe it's just like a proxy for saying, do we have a WebSocket connection?
Yep.
Has the stack been? It's just like, we're going to run this
right.
once.
Right. Also, too, it's more the whole thing, like, from effect dependencies to strict mode double render. In fact, all this is just being more explicit
right
in your code
right.
is what it's trying to get
right.
you to do.
Right.
So there's nothing more explicit
than I use on mount.
Use
right. Because an effect with an empty dependency is always like an approximation of an on mount. They said it's a good analogy, but it's not actually what's happening. And now we know that's why.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I agree. Use on mount. You should be able to use that basically everywhere if you really wanted to
yep.
guard against the double effects. So, yeah.
So just, and also like, there's just other things too, like you want to fire an effect when like just one prop changes,
uh-huh.
but you want to observe a whole bunch of other props in
mm-hmm.
there. You can just say like, use depends on something like that. Just write like,
right. Be very explicit.
Yeah.
At all.
Even if these things like, yeah, they have bugs because they could be referencing stale state.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Just be explicit. Don't let the empty dependency array be a proxy for our
problem. Yeah. Cool. I like it. Good stuff, man. Do you have a video on that or like a tweet or something? You should tweet about that. I'd like to reference that, really.
Okay.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, let's draft one.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Cool. All right. Hey, let's wrap this up. I think everyone's tired of hearing our voices. And I want to turn these lights off before they light our studio on fire. So
I'm more worried about inhaling the gas.
Okay. Not going to make any jokes about that one. Thanks to everyone for listening. I'm Sam, by the way.
Right.
We will see y'all next week. All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.